Hi, Abraham here. This is For the Record, program number 1359, Conversations with Mavi. This is conversation number 33. This is being recorded on November 9th of the year 2024. And let me begin, as always, by reminding you, please get the 64-gigabyte flash drive containing all of my life's work, including all the conversations with Mavi, my work on COVID. We're going to be talking about COVID. And I get no money whatsoever from this. Also, a mini library of old anti-fascist books that will really, I think, give a lot of historical foundation to what we're talking about. And again, neither Mavi nor myself gets any money whatsoever from this. Mavi, now we have been talking about a lot of things. I mean, so interesting, the cagoule propaganda, and we should bear in mind that people like Pierre Lafitte, Jean Filion, Mr. Filion, cagoule elements also appear to have been involved in the assassination of JFK as well, as it talks about.
That's right. They were employed as under something called the QJ Win program. That's all one word.
And just talk about, and we've spoken about that in the book, Coup in Dallas, and their exit from it in the 1222, 1223, 1224, and 1225.
That's right.
From memory. But now, bearing in mind that fascism is the corporate state, okay, that's one thing to keep in mind as a preface to what we're about to unpack for you. And also, keeping in mind eugenics. Eugenics is the pseudoscience. We spoke about that in our discussions of the op-ed piece by Sidney Blumenthal in The Guardian in my last series of his. And it is a pseudoscientific doctrine where you basically promote the strong and the healthy. You get rid of the people who are deemed to be genetically inferior, like black people, you know, you name it. And you promote young, healthy, strong people. You get rid of the old people, the sick people, unless, of course, they have a lot of money. But one of the things that we will be discussing in this show, maybe our next show as well, we'll have to see how some of these articles are very long, but we're going to talk about not only how COVID is a eugenic virus. And bear in mind that COVID, again, the evidence that it was deliberately created in a laboratory, we spoke about that at the conclusion of 1356, our last show, before the ones we've recorded today. But the pressure, on the one hand, from the corporations to let people get back to work, spending money and so forth, is one of the pressures that has led to COVID being, oh, no, the pandemic is over. It's not over. The new variants, if you get them, and if you've been vaccinated and don't have a comorbidity, they don't produce serious disease, but they do produce serious and permanent damage to the immune system and other systems of the body. To make a very, very long story very, very short, and we've spoken about this at great length in the programs in the past, COVID, it comes from a genetically engineered bat virus. And the human immune systems function in a very different way than bats. Bats' immune systems are such that when they get a viral infection, they can slow down their metabolism enormously to the point where the virus, which depends on infecting cells to perpetuate itself, the virus is in effect starved by the bat's immune system, slowing down to the point where the virus cannot successfully reproduce itself and continue with an infection. The human immune system doesn't work that way. It's one of the things that's led to the cytokine storms. And what we're going to be talking about in these articles is how public health policy, determined in part by the major corporations which pushed for an end to the social distancing and so forth, you know, the pandemic is over, and so people will get back to spending money and so forth. And also, there's an even more insidious thing, and that is that people's children are going to be infected by this virus, and even though they won't die right off the bat, it will shorten their lifespan. And old folks will get the virus, and they won't live to be as old. And take a look, if this sounds wild, the GOP has already targeted, they've spoken at length about, in their Project 2025, targeting Social Security and Medicare. And I think it was by the beginning of 2022, maybe by 2021, one in every 100 Americans 65 years or older had died of COVID. Well, that's a great way of not only saving money for Medicare, but Social Security as well. And if you can get a lot of people not to live that long, that's even better. So if this is something, you know, way out, wild, how can they say that? How can mommy say that? Oh, boy, you can't fool me. Yeah, can't fool you. Yeah, not more than a half dozen times before lunch on Friday, they can't fool you. This is only too real. Eugenics, the corporate state, the corporations wanting people to get back to work and spend money and their health be damned. And yet, even under a more insidious agenda underneath that, eugenics, get rid of the old people, get rid of the sick people. See to it that not as many people, see to it that the kids won't live to be old enough to retire and get Social Security and Medicare. Only the young and strong people will survive. So, Marty, why don't you start reading this first article here? This is from the Easy Chair blog, and it really hits the nail on the head. Now, we're going to see how things go, because we've got some long articles with very detailed discussion about health matters. We'll have to kind of play it by ear how much we have, but this first article is very important. It's from October 15th of 2023. It's by Anthony J. Leonardi, L-E-O-N-A-R-D-I, who I believe is a doctor from the Easy Chair blog, enumerating exceptional properties of SARS-CoV-2, unquote. And it's really more than that. But go ahead and start reading this article for us. Bear in mind, this guy's a doctor.
Quote, the first common SARS virus. There was a huge lobby for the normalization of SARS-CoV-2. Entire industries depend on the public's return to normal consumer and working behaviors. As such, the rationalizations and reassurances to the public that SARS-CoV-2 is a normal seasonal coronavirus are relentless. These are constructed like homilies and catchphrases such as, we must learn to live with it, and it's endemic, with the implication of its endemicity, referring to the abandonment of efforts which acknowledge its existence, such as testing. It is a complete misconception that introduction of a virus to the immune system makes subsequent infections like a common cold, and that virulence is due to novelty. If nerves, organs, and immune systems could speak, they would tell you of exceptional inflammation, aging, and death, which we must turn to science to hear. Professor Fuhr.
I'm going to reread this for emphasis, and then he cites one of the people who's a COVID denier, saying, it's okay, no, don't worry about it. Professor Fuhr, spelled F-U-H-R-E-R. Right. What a name. Continuing. Actually, restating this. It is a complete misconception that introduction of a virus to the immune system makes subsequent infections like a common cold, and that virulence is due to novelty. If nerves, organs, and immune systems could speak, they would tell a tale of exceptional inflammation, aging, and death, which we must turn to science to hear. Professor Fuhr would be taken aback to find that there are efforts to examine specific mechanisms which tell another tale than his own. Here I will give you the reader clear enumerations where SARS-CoV-2 is unlike a common cold. And omitted the part about Professor Fuhr, where he basically is saying is that it's absolutely only, this is a novel coronavirus, but it's okay, our immune systems handle it, don't, no sweat. Again, Professor Fuhr, F-U-H-R-E-R, and there's a link to this article so you can go back and see what Professor Fuhr, again, what a name, said for himself. Go ahead, Marty, continue with some of the things that's really, really, these are some of the things to keep in mind. And bear in mind, you know, one of the things you pointed out when we were off the air, Monty, the irony of having a former junkie like Robert F. Kennedy Jr. becoming an anti-vaxxer. I mean, it's just, oh, boy. And, you know, it reminds me that there was an old spy movie. Go ahead.
That has all the elements of like a Mad Magazine, like comic strip, you know, an anti-vaxxer junkie, you know.
It's just what, except this is real, and it's going to be Robert F. Kennedy Jr. who's going to be calling the shots, so to speak, on health policy, and it's just wild. A couple of articles upon that. And now, some of what we're about to talk about is going to be very detailed and scientific. But, again, Anthony Leonardi, who himself is a doctor, I've forgotten what exactly. He's, I believe, a physician himself. But talking about, and there's an article from Nature magazine, some of the things that SARS-CoV-2 does. Go ahead, Monty, start with the Arabic numeral one there.
Right. SARS-CoV-2 triggers a unique, long-lived inflammatory overreaction unseen in sepsis and influenza.
And that from Genome Medicine, Biomed Central, and again, there's the link there. Continue, Monty.
It caused cells of the immune system to react in a way that would further inflammation and activation of the immune system for an extended amount of time. For the technical facets of this, please see the paper. And then point two is SARS-CoV-2 sends T cells into the brain while lethal influenza does not.
And that began from Nature magazine. Go ahead, Marty.
Right. And then point three, SARS-CoV-2 directly causes autoimmunity by reprogramming a special type of T cell called the T regulatory cell, which has never been observed before.
And that's from frontiersin.org articles. And again, the URLs are there. Go ahead with number four, Monty.
Right. The human genetic line has not propagated any cyber coronavirus elements. Therefore, has never faced a cyber coronavirus infection to the extent of evolutionary adapt, except in the unlikely theoretical possibility of extremely negative selection, meaning infected humans did not create progeny.
I'm going to reread that last paragraph because it's really important. The human genetic line has not propagated any sarbacovirus elements, therefore never has faced sarbacovirus infection to the extent to evolutionarily adapt, except in the unlikely theoretical possibility of extremely negative selection, meaning infected humans did not create progeny. Notice that. And go ahead, read the next, keep reading, Monty, if you would, please.
Sure. There are more exceptional facets, but these are simple and digestible. There is also more to write about, but I must make a confession. The status quo has morphed in such a way as to browbeat scientists into disavowing a harsh reality in order to acquiesce to corporate and business interests. As we shall see the average life expectancy decline, we have been left intellectually out in the cold. The truth tellers have been assaulted and crushed, and the individuals that comprise the public in denial will be put off the realization of a below 70s life expectancy until each one approaches retirement in piecemeal, just as all of the grains of sand in an hourglass do not all at once.
Monty, I'm going to reread this last paragraph because this really expresses so much of what we're talking about. Not only the corporate state, because businesses have pressured institutions to say, no, the pandemic's over, no sweat, send your kids back to school, no problem, and we're going to have a junkie Bobby Jr. calling the shots here on this. It's just wild.
And I'm sure real quick that RFK Jr. is going to be nothing but a pimp to a stable of whores that the privatization of our healthcare system will become in the next, I say, 20 to 30 months, maybe less than that.
We'll see what happens with Project 2025. But the last paragraph of Dr. Leonardi's blog, there are more exceptional facets, but these are simple and digestible. There is also more to write about, but I must make a confession. The status quo has morphed in such a way as to browbeat scientists into disavowing a harsh reality in order to acquiesce to corporate and business interests. As we see the average life expectancy decline, we have been left intellectually out in the cold. And as I think, of course, fewer people will reach the ages when they can get Medicare or Social Security or their pensions. Continuing, the truth tellers have been assaulted and crushed, and the individuals that comprise the public in denial will put off the realization of a below 70s life expectancy until each one approaches retirement in piecemeal, just as all the grains of sand in an hourglass do not fall at once. That is incredibly important. And again, Junkie Bobby could determine health policy. The next article, Monty, why don't, this is a very important one, by someone who blogs on the name of, Nate Bear, and his blog is called Do Not Panic. It's facetious. Why don't you read the headline and then you continue with the reading of the article.
Sure.
Someone blogging under the name of Nate, N-A-T-E, Bear, B-E-A-R, the Do Not Panic blog of January 31st of 2024, The Forgotten Lessons of Infectious Disease Control. You bet. And bear in mind the article by Leon Arby. And we're going to have Junkie Bobby Jr., determining health policy. Go ahead, Monty, with remembering the 19th and 20th centuries.
Quote, remembering the 19th and 20th centuries, 8,000 Americans died of COVID in December. Already in January, more Americans have died of COVID than die of flu in an entire year. In the United Kingdom, COVID's January death toll will be around 1,000 people. Every week, thousands are being left with post-COVID conditions, including children.
That's very important. Yet, let me jump in. Every week, thousands are being left with post-COVID conditions, including children. And although they won't die right away, as they get older, then when they get nearing retirement age, and when they're going to be one of those grains of sand falling through the hourglass, then the chickens will come home to roost. Continue, Moppy.
Yet despite these horrifying numbers, more than 4 years after the start of an airborne pandemic, almost no one is talking about the air, the thing, the virus is in it. Campaigners are trying. In the UK, a mother confronted a Labour politician on radio about child absentees from school and asked why she wasn't recommending schools upgrade air filtration systems to reduce viral particles in the air. She responded that we need more evidence they work.
By the way, there's plenty of evidence that air filters, these are relatively inexpensive. You can buy them at stores, and they work really, really well. Continue.
In response to demands for clean indoor air, dodgy scientists who have pushed to minimize COVID said there has been no good evidence of air HEPA filters work. In fact, there is a mountain of evidence that they work. The study that said that they don't has been discredited.
And by the way, let me interrupt briefly. There are links when it says mountain and evidence. Those are links so you can, in the written description for the shows, you can follow that. Continue, Marty.
They've been working in many industrial settings for decades. It's one of the things that enables intensive pig farming. The Davos elite know they work. Last year, Davos was littered with them. This year, they held interviews outside. The fight for clean air to reduce disease transmission is nothing new. It is nearly two centuries old. By the start of the 20th century, tuberculosis had killed one out of every seven people who had ever lived. Tuberculosis is caused by a bacteria, and like the virus that causes COVID, it is airborne. Until the discovery of the tuberculobacterium in 1882, and because of its prevalence was so high among families of the same household, it was believed to be a hereditary disease. I should note parenthetically that is an example of eugenics mindset, that diseases are spread from generation to generation or certain ethnic groups.
And by the way,
though, with the article.
One thing, we'll see how we go time-wise. We may have to relegate this for our next program, but there's a very good blog where a guy talks about the Davos elite. And again, they have all these elaborate measures to avoid COVID infection, but it's a great way of getting rid of what he calls the proles. So we'll talk about that. By the way, Davos, the World Economic Forum, headed up by Klaus Schwab, whose father worked for a Swiss company named Escher Weiss, which actually was able to take advantage of the German slave labor programs because they were working on components for the Third Reich's atomic bomb. Then later, Klaus Schwab, himself a protege of Henry Kissinger, went to work for Escher Weiss. When Escher Weiss was producing components for the apartheid South African atomic bomb. So, yeah, he's not separated from these forces. But, yeah, continuing, Monica, it says, the fight for clean air to reduce disease transmission. Well, actually, no, it says, once this was discovered, that
right,
once you pick up there.
Right. Once this was discovered, public health authorities in the United States initiated a countrywide public health campaign and a sounding scope and scale. Staggering photos and posters tell the story of this time. Doctors and nurses toured the country, going into schools and libraries to give presentations to children and the public on what tuberculosis was and how it spread. Below, its presentation in a New York City school in 1900. Public health officials issued pamphlets that stressed the importance of fresh air for children, both at home and in schools, to prevent the spread of the disease. Disease Prevention Day was inaugurated in the United States in 1914. Doctors and nurses leading marches around this country to spread awareness about the importance of hygiene, cleanliness, and fresh air. In 1920, the Red Cross commissioned a public health poster presenting it as manly to stop disease from entering your home. The contrast to today's tough it out, get sick to get it well attitude is jaw-dropping.
Yep, it really is. It is a warm-up. In 1920, the Red Cross commissioned a public health poster presenting it as manly to stop disease from entering your home. The contrast with today's tough it out, get sick to get well attitude is jaw-dropping. Yes, indeed. Continue, Marty.
After the Second World War, the Works Progress Administration, as a part of FDR's New Deal, produced startling public health posters warning adults that kissing children risked infecting them with TB. Anything like this in the current COVID context is impossible to imagine. Unlike the half-hearted 18-month COVID public health campaign we witnessed, the TB awareness campaign went on for decades. Alongside the information campaigns, mass targeting programs were established across the country to locate as many people as possible with tuberculosis. Sanitariums were open where sufferers could convalesce and recover. It's even argued that architecture in the first half of the 20th century was heavily influenced by the design of sanitariums that prioritized windows through drafts and open spaces. And it worked.
And by the way, there was a link to the original article. I've taken out the pictures that they have. Obviously, they won't work in radio. But you can see the very things that the author is talking about here. Continue, Marty.
Right. And it worked. In 1900, it is estimated that there were millions of cases of tuberculosis in the United States, with nearly 200 deaths for every 100,000 infections. This had reduced to 115,000 cases in 1945, and by 1960, this halved to 55,000. The rate of death went from 40 per 100,000 people in 1945 to 6 per 100,000 in 1960. If I may just interject a little facade, as it were, to what Robert Kennedy Jr. is representing with his anti-vaxxer campaign, Dave. It should be noted that in May of 1962, Robert Kennedy Sr. actually marched down the streets of San Francisco promoting the polio vaccine. So, you know, look at the didactic there of one generation, you know.
Well, then, I guess that's what shooting speedballs will do for you.
Right. Continue with the article, though. The real kicker is this. Such stunning success was achieved without antibiotics or vaccines.
I want to just read the data again, I think, by way of emphasis. In 1900,
oh, for sure,
it is estimated there were millions of cases of TB in the U.S. with nearly 200 deaths for every 100,000 infections. This had reduced to 115,000 cases in 1945, and by 1960, this had halved to 55,000. The rate of death went from 40 per 100,000 people in 1945 to 6 per 100,000 in 1960. Continue, Marty.
The real kicker is this. Such stunning success was achieved without antibiotics or vaccines, which only became available for tuberculosis, the BCG vaccine, in the late 40s and early 50s. In the United States, the BCG vaccine was never used, and to this day is only rarely used. Social epidemiologist Thomas McNoen found that the mortality rate from tuberculosis in the United States has already dropped 91% by the time of significant antibiotic use in the 1950s. Antibiotics and vaccination, he concluded, had contributed to just 3.2% of the mortality reduction from tuberculosis since the 19th century. Non-pharmaceutical interventions were the foundation upon which vaccines and treatments were built. The fight against infectious diseases 100 years earlier in 19th century Britain, like the story of TB in the U.S., provides stark COVID contrasts and parallels. TB was one of the many infectious diseases that plagued the filthy cities of rapidly industrializing England. It can be hard to believe just how far lifespans crashed during this period. In the first half of the 19th century, average life expectancy in Liverpool for laborers in the city was just 15 years old. The average tradesman was just 22.
One more time, Mother. I'm going to reread this by way of emphasis. TB was one of the many infectious diseases that plagued the filthy cities of rapidly industrializing. Let me begin the paragraph. The fight against infectious disease 100 years earlier in 19th century Britain, like the story of TB in the U.S., provides stark COVID contrasts and parallels. TB was one of the many infectious diseases that plagued the filthy cities of rapidly industrializing England. It can be hard to believe just how far lifespans crashed during this period. In the first half of the 19th century, average life expectancy in Liverpool for laborers in the city was just 15 years old. The average lifespan for tradesmen was just 22. While a little better in places like London and Manchester, average life expectancy for laborers in most big cities was under 20 years of age. Continue, Marty, from there.
Cities were growing exponentially. Trade across the empire was flourishing, but industrialization wasn't liberating people. It was immersiating them.
That's immiserating them. It was making them miserable.
Excuse me.
But that's all changed now, hasn't it? Oh, Jesus. Continue.
The industrial heartlands of the Empire Corps were sinks for human life. Concerned that disease and death was undermining the project of industrialization and fearing a revolution among those condemned to live in filth, the British government commissioned Edwin Chadwick to undertake an investigation into the conditions of the working poor. That's Chadwick, C-H-A-D-W-I-C-H, is spelling on that. Chadwick's report on the sanitary condition of laboring population of Great Britain said unsanitary conditions were linked to the spread of disease. No one in this time really knew why. Germ theory wasn't established and the causes were contested. The leading theory, of which Chadwick was a proponent, was that rotting organic waste created a miasma, a bad air that made people sick.
Let me continue from there, Marvin. That's miasma, M-I-A-S-M-A, or bad air. I think in Italian that's called malaria, and that's where the disease comes from. It was believed that they didn't know about mosquito bites. It was bad air that made you sick. Continuing. While he got this wrong, Chadwick understood a basic fact. Clean air and water were the keys to reducing disease outbreaks. His report led to the Public Health Act of 1848, under which towns had the power to install sewer systems, ensure constant water supply to homes, and build drainage that carried wastewater outside urban areas for the first time. The act was highly controversial and opposed by many who saw it as an overbearing intrusion on people's lives, and it was defeated in a parliamentary vote. The bosses of private companies that supplied fresh water and removed sewage from middle-class areas lobbied against the act. their business is threatened by a national system of clean water and sewage disposal. Laissez-faire ideology dominated, and politicians argued that if people wanted clean water or sewage removal, that was their choice. Architects fought against Chadwick's demand that only circular, glazed sewer pipes be used for carrying away water. They said they didn't work, arguing for traditional square brick pipes despite all the evidence. The Times, England's biggest newspaper at the time, wrote an editorial raging against the idea of, quote, being bullied into health, unquote, by the government. I'm assuming much of this sounds familiar in the context of COVID. There was a graphic there, and it talks about people, about how manly it was, but basically forcing people to take steps to preserve their health was unmanly. And anyway, because that was a screenshot there. And the author continued, I'm assuming much of this sounds familiar in the context of COVID. Masks are our glazed pipes. The you-do-you attitude on avoiding SARS-2, the perfect mirror to the laissez-faire attitudes of the 19th century. This Public Health Act, which passed the second time, and especially its successor act in 1875, set the stage for sustained reductions in infectious disease and increased life expectancy. And they did so before the advent of modern medicine. Continue from there, Marby, if you would. A King's College London Harvard study. Anyway, I'll continue from there. A King's College London Harvard study found that in 1900, the annual death rates for diphtheria, measles, and pertussis, or whooping cough, in the UK were 40, 13, and 12 per 100,000 people, respectively. By 1900, there were no deaths reported for diphtheria and only 2 and 1 per 100,000 for measles and pertussis. The authors point out that most of the fall in death rates for measles and pertussis occurred before the introduction of their respective vaccines or the availability of antibiotics. We have forgotten that public health gains, especially against infectious disease, have always been fought for and achieved in a social context. They have never been gifted to us by medicine. And that's something that is really important. Skipping down, if society, quote, if society fails to appreciate the important role non-medical interventions played in reducing past infectious diseases, it is unlikely to continue to attribute modern medicine as the primary vehicle to improve contemporary population health. Conversely, people will be less likely to support public health interventions or policies that seek to improve population health by addressing social determinants of death. And he then goes on, that's unquote. Vaccinations and treatments give you an extra push away from the illness and death infectious disease brings, but they have never been and can never be the basis for public health. Skipping down. So here we are in 2024, 4 years into a pandemic that is being widely ignored because of the very reason researchers warned about. But then skipping down again. The belief that modern medicine, not public health measures, determine the control of infectious disease was and remains fully in charge at the societal level. We were led to believe the world had changed for 18 months when in reality it had changed forever. Because vaccines, especially since COVID, have become a prized object in the culture war, it has become controversial to state an historical fact. Infectious diseases of the past were defanged by public health measures, not pharmaceutical ones. And that is very important. In the last sentence of that blog, how much more failure is necessary before public health authorities return to doing the job they were set up to do? And, Mommy, you want to read some of the boldface section? There are a series of really good articles by a post by Julia Doubleday, Doubleday, in the blog The Gauntlet. And then there's one from May 7th of 2024 this year. Does the public understand that, quote, variant, unquote, means, quote, vaccine resistant, unquote. You want to read some of the sections of this, Bobby?
Sure. Getting boosted is critical because the virus is changing. Other forms of mitigation are critical to slow the rate of change. Last week, the World Health Organization announced that it will recommend creation for a new booster for the JN1 variant of the COVID-19. One little problem, JN1 was hyperdominant all fall and winter, but is quickly fading away. Now, its descendant, KP2, is positioned to take off in an early summer wave. By this winter, when we're able to get the brand new J1 variant, the dominant variant will likely be a descendant of the KP2. In other words, a distant relative of the NJ1. If you, like me, got the most recent booster, you got a vaccine designed to help prevent and lessen symptoms of the XBB.1.5, the variant most dominant in the winter of 2022-23. During that winter, the booster was designed to combat the Omicron BA variants, which were predominant a year prior in the winter of 2021-2022. You see the pattern?
Often when the topic of COVID is broached, people who have paid little attention since early 2021 point out that, quote, now we have the vaccines, unquote. Okay, yes, but are you aware of what has changed since 2021, specifically the virus? When Moderna and Pfizer announced their COVID-19 vaccines, the efficacy of the shots was thrilling, and because we talk about that, and it was, but then the point that Julia Doubleday is making here is that the virus is mutating, and vaccination alone forces the virus to mutate. And again, she's not an anti-vaxxer at all, nor am I. But the point of the previous blog was that there are public health measures, not only using HEPA filters and the things that ensure clean air, but continuing the things like rigorous testing and quarantining. If you're sick, if you're infected, stay home. But business does not want these things because they want people to, oh, you know, you do you, it's over, whoop, whoop-dee-doo, go out, spend money, go to the concert, go to work, no problem. Send your kids to school. If they get sick, tough stuff. And then I'll read the next paragraph and then you pick it up from there, Marby. In the vaccine world, this is a home run. No vaccines are 100% effective against infection, but if you can get enough shots, 90% plus effective in arms fast enough, you can achieve what is called herd immunity. Herd immunity is achieved when the, quote, disease gradually disappears from a population and may result in eradication or permanent reduction of infections to zero, unquote. The virus runs out of hosts and dies out. That's basically what happens with a bat's immune system. They slow down their metabolism to where basically the virus is starved. There just aren't enough cells for the virus to continue to infect. But human beings' immune systems don't work that way. And it's one of the reasons why the Pentagon has been studying bat viruses. And SARS, it's mutated many times since the original Wuhan thing. It is a genetically engineered bat virus, and it is a product of biological warfare. Continue, Monty.
This was the explicit goal of the Biden administration starting in early 2021, that we could be heading to herd immunity by summer. His exact words were, quote, I feel confident that by summer we're going to be well on our way to heading towards herd immunity, end quote. This meant, at the time, getting to a place where the majority of the population has immunity to COVID, and therefore vulnerable people aren't exposed. It's critical that people understand Biden's COVID response never achieved its own stated goals. Rather, the public was gaslit into accepting a new goal, forever reinfections. It's critical that people understand that Biden's COVID response never achieved its own stated goals, rather than public was gaslit into accepting a new goal, forever reinfections. Not a exposing vulnerable people was a key goal of the lockdowns and other mitigation measures that were adopted in 2020. COVID is dangerous, but the vast majority of able people under 65 who got COVID did not die even prior to the vaccines. It's odd to see young liberals pointed to their own mild infections as proof that vulnerable people don't need to live in fear, because it's literally the same argument young MAGA people made in 2020. What MAGA attributed to their immune system, liberals attribute to the vaccines. But the reality is that we're never the demographic most at risk. The goal of lockdown was to avoid the exposure of vulnerable groups that would lead to mass death and overwhelm healthcare systems and hospitals. The goal was to protect vulnerable groups until herd immunity could be achieved.
Let me reread just sections of that last paragraph, Bob, because it's really key here. And again, with regard to Biden, Hunter Biden was involved heavily with Metabiota, and Metabiota's hooked up with EcoHealth Alliance, and he's anything but removed from this. So the point being that the national security establishment had Joe Biden by the short hairs. I mean, he was not free to do anything. Plus, the corporations want people back to work. They want people to go out and spend money. They were against the sort of rigorous testing, for example, quarantining if you're infected, clean air in the workplace and the schools. And yes, do get vaccinated. I have my own thoughts about the mRNA versus Novavax, but then, you know, that could be misconstrued on the air. I mean, I don't want to be, oh, he's an anti-vaxxer, we got to cancel him and have that. It really is bad, but here we go. It is critical that people understand that Biden's COVID response never achieved its own stated goals. Rather, the public was gaslit into accepting a new goal: forever reinfections. Not exposing vulnerable people was a key goal of the lockdowns and other mitigation measures that we adopted in 2020. But getting rid of the vulnerable people is eugenic. You know, get rid of the old folks. And infect young people and even young adults. And, hey, man, you know, I've got that COVID. It's not so bad. You know, but if you've been vaccinated and if you don't have a comorbidity, yes, it does not produce severe disease, but it affects. And the articles that I've talked about, that it affects everything. It particularly is bad for the immune system. It also affects the brain and cognition and the heart and the blood vessels and the bones. It infects and affects many different parts of the body. And in particular, even a mild infection, yes, it won't kill you. Yes, you can go continue with your life after that. But it permanently and seriously and adversely affects the immune system, so you won't live as long. You've been more susceptible to disease. Again, eugenics. It's what they want. Not exposing vulnerable people was a key goal of the lockdowns and other mitigation measures that we adopted in 2020. COVID was and is dangerous, but the vast majority of able people under 65 who got COVID did not die even prior to the vaccines. It's odd to see young liberals pointing to their own mild infections as proof that vulnerable people don't need to, quote, live in fear, unquote, because it's literally the same argument young MAGA people made in 2020. says Dave. When what MAGA attributed to their immune systems, liberals attribute to the vaccines, but the reality is they were never the demographic most at risk. The goal of lockdown was to avoid the exposure of vulnerable groups that would lead to mass death and overwhelm healthcare systems and hospitals. The goal was to protect vulnerable groups until herd immunity could be achieved. Read this next paragraph, Monty. This is a mind blower.
As late as November 2021, amid a Delta wave, Fauci's projection for what back to normal would look like, the point at which we could give up masking and other mitigations, was no more than 10,000 cases a day nationally, ideally under 3,300 per day. But today, during the lowest low we've had in a full year, we're seeing 165,000 COVID cases daily. The winter wave broke 1.5 million cases per day. Since Fauci set the bar of under 10,000 cases per day as the marker for normal, we've never had one single day fewer than 10,000 new cases. In fact, we've never seen a single day under 100,000 new infections, or 10 times his marker for normal. And we've had many with over a million each winter, 100 times Fauci's marker for normal. This is not herd immunity, and it is not what the government projected or prepared for.
I would amend the following. Yeah, maybe not some elements of the government, but this is what the eugenics people want. The next paragraph, again, note that Fauci said, ideally, 3,300 cases per day is when we would have the virus under control, the pandemic under control. And as Julia Bubbly notes, but today, during the lowest, this is November, this article is early 2024. But today, during the lowest low we've had in a full year, we're seeing 165,000 COVID cases daily, as opposed to the 3,300 that Fauci was talking about. The winter wave broke 1.5 million cases per day. Since Fauci set the bar of, quote, under 10,000, anyway, it goes on. But now this next paragraph is beautiful. Perhaps this is why our government officials and media continue to try to redefine herd immunity and claim that we do have herd immunity to COVID-19. Instead of explaining that the vaccine first, or rather vaccine-only strategy was misguided and has failed, governments keep moving the goalposts of success. They declare victory while urging us to get reinfected repeatedly. Note the following. And there are links here to various things here. And again, the written descriptions will have the links. Obviously, I can't do that on radio. Reinfections, which, by the way, carry myriad long-term health risks, including cognitive damage, heart damage, and disability, among other things. And herd immunity is what we have for measles, smallpox, diphtheria, mumps, and other vaccine-preventable diseases. But that Bobby Jr., in charge of health care, he's going to put a bet in that, he says. Vulnerable people, even those who cannot be vaccinated because of medical conditions, are protected from exposure to an infection with these diseases by the immunity of the herd. How is a vulnerable person being protected by the, quote, herd, unquote, if the plan is for them to get exposed over and over and over again? It's ludicrous. The early high efficacy of the original shots is why their debut was made with such jubilation. And we'll skip what Rachel Maddow said and continue on. Marty, what says, a vaccinated person gets exposed to the virus. Continue there, if you would.
A vaccinated person gets exposed to the virus. The virus does not infect them. The virus cannot then use that person to go anywhere else. It cannot use a vaccinated person as a host to get more people. That means the vaccines will get us to the end of this.
This is what Rachel Walensky is saying on Rachel Maddow's show. And actually, the point that Julia Bubbly is making is that with each new variant, that is not what the vaccine was developed to repel. And although it's also pointed out in some of these blogs that because the newer variants aren't as far from the older ones from which they evolved, the vaccines do provide some immunity to them, but not that much. And also, a vaccinated person can have breakthrough infections because of that. That's what's so important, and that's why not using social healthcare measures like clean air, quarantining if you've been infected, and all of the things that business did not want because they want people, you do you, it's okay, go out, whoopee, spend money, go to the concert, go to the whatever. And people are being told, don't worry about your kids getting sick all the time, no problem, they'll be all right. Yeah, except when they're later in life, when their immune systems are compromised, they won't be living long enough to get Social Security or Medicare, as Dr. Leonardi pointed out, the sands of the hourglass don't go through the waste at the same time. I'll continue from there. To reiterate, Walensky explicitly stated that because the COVID vaccines at that time were believed to prevent infection, the shots could end the pandemic. It also implies that were the vaccines not able to prevent infection, they would not be sufficient to end the pandemic. And continue from there, Bobby.
Right. Right. Our leaders overestimated the ability of vaccines alone to mitigate COVID because of early data before the virus had had the opportunity to counterpunch us through mutation. By July 4th, the Biden administration declared victory over COVID. That following winter was the second deadliest wave of COVID pandemic. It was the deadliest wave for cancer patients. Winter 2021-22 was a wave of mass death of the exact kind we tried to avoid. We saw thousands of people dying per day, while the good folks at the New York Times continued to cover it as no big deal and even spin it as a positive. It was the point at which many vulnerable people being reassured that with the vaccines and the mild strain circulating, Omicron, which was later shown to be no milder than the original Wuhan strain, were exposed to COVID for the first time. Some of them paid for the mistake of believing our government with our lives. We will likely never see a wave as acutely deadly again because the hundreds of thousands of people who could not survive the first contact of COVID-19 are already dead.
Let me read the next paragraph. We're almost out of time. We've got about 9 minutes left. 40% of those who died during the Omicron wave one were vaccinated. 60% of those dying by the following summer were vaccinated. And vaccinated people still make up the majority of deaths today. Yes. Vaccinated people are overrepresented in the population, but as thousands continue to die each week this winter, it's a far cry from Biden's claims that COVID had become a, quote, pandemic of the unvaccinated, unquote. In early 2022, his administration blamed unvaccinated people for overwhelming hospitals while tens of thousands of vaccinated people died in a matter of weeks. Here's what happened. Throughout the pandemic, the Biden and Trump administrations and governments worldwide have been prone to accepting the most optimistic science as the truth and promoting those optimistic predictions as solid facts. COVID isn't the only arena where this is true. We certainly see it with climate change. We saw it with our premature declaration that COVID wasn't airborne. It is parenthetically. We saw it with our claims that people would only get COVID once. We saw it with the claims that COVID would probably just randomly get milder. And in the case of the vaccines, we saw it with the idea that herd immunity to COVID would be possible, but the virus wouldn't just quickly mutate around vaccine protection. Unfortunately, the virus mutated very, very quickly, and one can only wonder if perhaps that was deliberately done. Now, we're going to do one more show after this one today, Monty, and we're going to get into some other stuff. But again, want to reiterate, we've got about six, 7 minutes left. But again, think about, first of all, business pressure to go back to normal. Don't worry, go back, go to work. Go spend money. Go spend money. Go spend more money. Go spend more money after that. Return to normal because they don't care about anything but money. I'm sorry if that sounds cynical, but watch what's going to happen in the next few years. But, and beyond that, eugenics. In our next program, we're going to present some excerpts of an article talking about the eugenic aspects of COVID. And eugenics is so important. And bear in mind that this seemed to be, well, these guys are crazy, they're paranoid. The Trump administration and the Republicans have already spoken about going after Social Security and Medicare. And we'll talk about some articles here. The Davos elite, they want to reduce the world's population. This is a great way of doing it. And the Davos people are keenly aware of the importance of clean air. They take all the precautions necessary. And bear in mind that in charge of health policy, once again, for the Trump crowd, it's going to be brainworm Bobby. I mean, this is surreal. Surreal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just, Money, we got about 5 minutes left. I'm going to promote the flashlight. Just your thoughts on what we're seeing, seeing today.
Well, I had a very disturbing thought, and once again, just a personal musing of mine. And it's the concept of these mass deportations that are supposed to, according to Mr. Trump himself, on his first day and his second term of office, are supposed to take place. I was just thinking to myself that that would be the perfect petri dish, these mass deportation centers for spreading a novel coronavirus or potentially something more savage than the coronavirus. And, ultimately we'll see an extension of what the Third Reich had planned in the final hours of the Second World War. Bear in mind, when the bullets ran out, when it became too expensive to use poison gas because, poison gas requires petroleum, and when the bullets were no longer there, where did the Nazis turn in order to get rid of the people in their concentration camps, okay? They turned to germ warfare. They turned to bacteriological warfare.
And that was specifically enunciated by Kurt Blome, who was one of the top Nazi scientists, the liaison officer with Unit 731 in Manchuria. He also was researching bubonic plague for the Third Reich, reporting directly behind Himmler. And there is a hereditary immunity to the AIDS infection, the CCR5 Delta 32,
right,
that is only present in purebred Northern Europeans, that also provided hereditary immunity to bubonic plague or the Black Death, as it was known. But it was Kurt Blome, and Kurt Blome didn't go quietly into retirement. What did he do after World War II? He went to work for the U.S., and his biological
was... If I may...
Very good. We've got 3 minutes left.
Yeah, if I may, Kurt Blome not only was brought here to the United States, but he was awarded the rank of a brigadier general in the United States Army and established the Fort Detrick Special Weapons Center, which is the base for all of our biological weapons facilities during the Cold War.
Including USAMRIB, which was closed down by the CDC in early August of 29 on the cusp of the pandemic for the release of unnamed specific agents. And who knows? And the former commander of USAMRIB, David France, is the policy advisor to the EcoHealth Alliance. So this is, again, if this seems like, again, we're not anti-vaxxers, but we're pointing out that... it is really important to maintain a full, or it's like fighting a war. Vaccination is one of the weapons. We're not anti-vaxxers, but you have to do other things. You have to test. You have to have clean air, other things to maintain public health. But if you don't, well, the kids won't live to retirement age. And,
bear in mind, the incoming administration has all but promised to destroy the EPA and gut all regulatory for the major energy concerns in this country and potentially on a global level. So as for the clean air, well, bye bye to that.
Yep. I mean, all kinds of public clean indoor air, but everything, here we are, folks. And, it just kills me, the long term, I know, Monty, but, Elon Musk, the richest man in the world, is going to be in charge by Donald Trump of helping to cut government waste, right? He's already said he wants to eliminate $2 trillion, I think it is, in discretionary spending, and there's only 1.6 in discretionary spending available in the federal budget. I mean, he'll certainly tamp that down a little bit, but you have the richest man in the world warning that under his tutelage and under the Donald's tutelage, that we're going to be in for a very rough ride. Most Americans are going to have a really tough time for a while. That's just, again, I have to be careful. This is on radio, because if I were to give my full, honest appraisal of that, I would have to reach into the foulest backwaters of my vocabulary, and I can't do that on radio.
If I may, I'll just say this much. The tough time that Americans are going to go through is like calling being mauled by a bear a tough time.
Yep, it is. And we'll talk more about that tough time in our next program. However, do get the flash drive, which will chronicle how we got to this mess. And I get no money from this, neither does Monty. This concludes For the Record program number 1359, Conversations with Monty. This is conversation number 33. This is being recorded on November 9th of the year 2024. For Monty, this is Dave Remy saying, Thanks for listening.